Welcome to another episode of the Criminal Law Department Presents podcast, a production of the Criminal Law Department at the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School in Charlottesville, Virginia. Every 2 weeks, we release a new episode. Today, we're going to have a conversation about a recent opinion from the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. Please note that these episodes may contain facts and circumstances surrounding criminal trials. Listener discretion is advised.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable United States Court of Appeals of the Armed Forces is now open and in session. God save the United States of America in this honorable court.
Welcome back to Criminal Law Department Presents CAF Chats. I'm Major Allie Montgomery, and today I am joined by...
Major Ling Rivera. Great to be here with you, Allie.
Today we're diving into United States versus Rowan, decided on September 15th, 2025. It's a recent CAF decision addressing government discovery obligations and the Brady Doctrine.
Allie, this case is a must-listen for anyone handling military justice cases because it's a reminder of the government's duty to disclose discovery, and also about the consequences when that duty is not met. And Ali, with that, let's jump into the procedural history. Here, a special court-martial composed of officer members convicted appellant, contrary to his pleas, of one charge and specification of wrongful use of cocaine in violation of Article 112 Alpha Uniform Code of Military Justice. The military judge sentenced appellant to a reduction to E2, restrictions to the limits of base for 45 days, hard labor without confinement for 3 months, and a reprimand. Ali, what are some of the additional facts in this case?
Sure. So Rowan was a senior airman in the Air Force who, after a unit-wide urinalysis, tested positive for cocaine. He and his roommate, NW, both actually tested positive after attending the same social event over the 4th of July weekend. Their cases were investigated together as companion cases.
During the investigation, NW waived his rights and suggested that a pre-workout powder brought back from deployment by their third roommate, DB, might have caused the positive results. Then the government opened a case against Rowan for wrongful use of cocaine, and the defense specifically requested any exculpatory evidence, including anything that might negate Rowan's guilt.
That's right, Lynn. The government responded that it would provide the case file for NW and all SFOI materials. But as the case progressed, it became clear that not all relevant evidence was actually disclosed. At trial, the defense filed a motion to compel discovery for the outstanding discovery regarding unit sweep documents and the derogatory data for at least one government witness. Although trial counsel represented that the government had complied with the discovery requirements to look for this derogatory data, counsel later conceded that the derogatory data remained outstanding and affirmatively stated that the government will make efforts to get that information. Trial counsel provided derogatory data for only one witness. However, information related to testing registries of the remainder of the accused unit involved in the sweep had been destroyed and was determined to be unrecoverable.
And at trial, ultimately, appellant was convicted solely based on the positive urinalysis. There was no additional corroborating evidence on the cocaine use. The government relied on the permissive inference of knowingly and wrongfully to prove guilt, right, which the government is allowed to do. Nonetheless, the additional derogatory data for SFOI investigators was neither disclosed nor produced, Ali.
And so what evidence was withheld?
Well, among other things, the government failed to disclose that SFOI had investigated the pre-workout powder that Rowan had talked about before, as well as the roommate. And additionally, that a medical review officer, an MRO, had opined that the supplement could cause a false positive for cocaine. And that's going to be really important when the case goes on appeal, right? Because we're going to discuss about what are some of the consequences of that failure to disclose and what are some of the things that the defense could have done with that information as well. Additionally, that SFOI had destroyed the case file on DB and NW, which we talk about were initially investigated at companion cases, and the fact that they look at the supplement used by those two other airmen. Additionally, there were undisclosed interviews and derogatory data about the investigators.
That's a lot.
It is a lot.
And so then on appeal, Rowan argued that the government's failure to disclose this evidence violated Brady versus Maryland and Rule for Courts Martial 701. The Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals agreed that the evidence should have been disclosed, but found that it wasn't material and that there was no reasonable probability for a different result at trial. Were there any certified issues in this case, Lynn?
Yes. In this case, CAF certified two issues. First issue, whether the lower court erroneous resolution of a question of law, finding that the withheld evidence was immaterial and there was no prejudice to the appellant, violated Brady v. Maryland. And the second issue, whether the lower court's erroneous resolution of a question of law, finding that the government did not violate appellant's rights under Rules for Court Martial RCM 701 Alpha 6, violated binding precedent by this court.
And so, Lynn, what was the holding of the case?
Ali, in this case, CAF saw it differently from the CCA. CAF held that the lower court actually erred in its Brady analysis and that Rowan was actually prejudiced by the non-disclosure. Some of the things that the court emphasized was that the question is not what necessarily was raised at trial. This is important for the listeners to understand. When we're talking about non-disclosures, it's not necessarily about what was the evidence that was raised at trial, but what could have been raised had the defense had this information to be able to pursue maybe a line of questioning, maybe present a defense or something else, or maybe they just decide not to use it at all, right? So the test goes to whether or not this is something that they could have raised and what are the consequences of that had the government disclosed that information. With that, how did the CAF analyze this case?
Right. So to your point, CAF looked at whether or not innocent ingestion could have been a viable defense. And so CAF applied the Brady test here. Was the evidence favorable and material? Was it suppressed? Here, the evidence was clearly favorable. It supported an innocent ingestion defense and could have been used for impeachment purposes. The evidence was suppressed, whether intentionally by the government or not, and the failure to disclose by the government was prejudicial.
And Ali, I think you mentioned two things that are very important to highlight. Number one, when we're doing the Brady test, it's going to be different from RCM 701 Alpha 6, right? We're talking here whether or not it has to be both. It has to be material and it has to be favorable. And that's usually when we're looking at that second prong that a lot of the cases, the court is going to come back and say, yes, it was a Brady violation. However, there's nothing that was that favorable to the appellant. Therefore, we're not going to reverse the case. Or maybe there's another remedy, right, that they can come up with. The other thing that is very important to note, oftentimes we see trial counsel arguing, well, there's no bad faith, right? We were not doing this on purpose. And in this specific case, Major A.N. was a trial counsel for both appellant and N.W.'s courts martial. And she was also a supervisory attorney. So one of the memos that she submitted to the court talks about the fact that she wasn't aware that there was this other investigation. What are some of the things that that investigator was doing when it came to that MRO report and some of the other things that were non-disclosed? And also that there was no malice. The explanation from the government's perspective was, hey, the office was dealing with minimal manning at the time. Nonetheless, CAF comes back and points out government lacks of knowledge about the evidence is no excuse. Let's remember that prosecutors have a duty to learn of any favorable evidence, not to others, acting on the government's behalf, including investigators. Let's not forget, we have USB Stilato that talks about knowledge and access, because basically the trial counsel doesn't get to bury their head in the sand to avoid learning about federal information. But more importantly, even if it's negligence, you don't need to have malice or willful intent in order for you to violate Brady or even RCM 701.
And all of that, plus the court also notes that the destruction of evidence by SFOI, by the investigators, was critical and made the trial fundamentally unfair.
Absolutely. And that's why CAF comes back, reverses the CCA, set aside Rowan's conviction and sentence, and a rehearing was authorized. Here, the court made clear that the government's discovery obligations are broad, and the failure to meet them can undermine the confidence in the outcome of the trial. That's why they come up with this decision. Ali, what are some of the takeaways for government counsel?
So for government counsel, this case is a stark reminder of your discovery obligations. You have to be an active participant in the investigation and disclose all exculpatory and impeachment-type evidence, even if it's not in your immediate possession. Here, this wasn't in their immediate possession, right? It was in the possession of investigators. And remember that willful ignorance is not a defense.
And how can, and I know you have experience, right? You used to work at OSIC. How can you try to avoid some of these issues when you have investigators, right, that perhaps are doing different cases at the same time, looking at different lines of investigation, and you're also having to try your own cases and do your own investigations? What are some of the recommendations, especially for those new trial counsel that are out there trying to make it work with many cases at the same time?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, as a prosecutor, building relationships with your military police, with your CID, or here it's OSI, right, or NCIS, building relationships with your primary investigators on post, but also getting off post and building relationships with the local investigators that are involved in your cases. All of that builds the framework to hopefully stave off this type of issue, because the investigators will know that you're actively working on this one case. And here it's a companion case. So if they know you're working on a companion case, they will help you identify when material exists that's relevant to your case. And also, they may want you to come down and help them form an investigative plan and all of that for this other companion case. So really, relationship building and having consistent touch points, like weekly touch points with those entities, will really help avoid issues like this in the future.
That's a wonderful advice, Ali. And I think also from the perspective of trial counsel, as you're reviewing your case file, especially for drug cases, you know, there's certain things that you should be looking for. And in this case, that MRO report is one of those things that you will usually find within the file. And if you don't see it, or if you don't know what you're looking at, talk to your supervisor. Ask them, hey, what is this report about? Can I talk to that doctor, right? Perhaps that person that conducted the review. Or if you see there are things that are missing, or maybe you don't even know they're missing, but if you talk to your supervisor, they can square you away and walk you through what you should have in a complete packet, hopefully try to avoid some of stuff like this. And then I will say for the defense counsel, always make specific discovery requests, because you will get a more favorable standard on appeal if you do a specific request versus a generic, just the boilerplate discovery request. And be alert to the possibility that not all relevant evidence has probably been disclosed. And sometimes that's just the nature of trial work, but you need to keep asking. And also reminded the court that there's some outstanding requests that need to be ruled on, right? And if you don't get a ruling from the court, just remind the court, Your Honor, we still have, right, three issues that are pending, and here's where we at. And of course, from the defense side, like putting the court in a position that they understand what you're looking for and whether or not you suspect that you have evidence that is missing. Anything else you can think of for the defense counsel?
For the defense counsel, also remember that you can give a call to USASIL, right? Call USASIL and ask them these types of questions. Like if you get a packet in a drug case and you're like, hey, I think something's missing, giving them a call, if you're not making any headway with your trial counsel, may be something to consider.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think also it goes to the defense counsel has a responsibility to also do their own investigation, right? And I think this is where you see like the innocent ingestion stuff. Oftentimes you're going to see that the defense counsel will do their own investigation and then come across certain things that potentially could be exculpatory. And maybe that's another thing that they should be aware of, that yes, you should be getting everything from the government, but that doesn't mean you don't get to investigate. You also have to do your due diligence.
Yeah, it's a great point. Well, Lynn, that's all for today's episode on United States versus Rowan. Thanks so much for joining me. It was a great time talking.
Thank you, Ali. Thank you for having me. And we'll see you next time on Calf Shots.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us today for another episode of the Criminal Law Department Presents podcast. If anything you heard sparked a thought, we'd love to connect with you. Your comments help us create better future content for the field or the fleet. Reach out to us on Facebook or Instagram. The information can be found in the show notes for today's episode. The views expressed in today's podcast are those of the presenters and not necessarily the Judge Advocate General's or the Department of the Army or the Department of Defense.
Thanks, counsel, for both sides. And the court will stand in recess until further order of the court.